looked at that and I said, okay, this could be a great space to invest in. Then I started asking myself, well, why aren't the big firms investing here? We're keying on, you know, the market. We're keying on the ability to compete. And then we're keying on the management and the team, right? And so we're trying to get a sense early on how this thing may look. And then we bring in our playbook, our governance playbook, to help us kind of solidify how we should do things moving forward. Reading Moneyball taught me a lot about business. So I would say that there's a great book called Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Welcome back to the Raw Selection Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Javar Avery, president of Sun and Moon Capital, a private equity firm focused on acquiring companies with 1 million to 2 million of EBITDA, commonly referred to nowadays as microcap investing. We're going to jump into the pitfalls and opportunities of microcap investing, but also the reliance and absolute passion that Javar has for playbooks and implementing them into your business. Before we jump in, I just want to thank everyone who drops me a message, who reaches out of a LinkedIn, email, etc., and just says how great and how valuable the podcast has been for them. If there's anybody listening that hasn't already, please do give us a review on whatever platform you use. It just helps with the algorithms and pushing the podcast out there. But let's jump in into the podcast. Javar, is this customary if you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please?
Sure. Yeah, so my name is Javar Avery. I am the president, CEO of Sun and Moon Capital. Based here in Dallas, originally from Virginia. And Sun and Moon Capital is essentially we call it micro cap investing company, where we go and buy smaller companies, typically 1 to 2 million of EBITDA. Our company consists of about, you know, 4 or 5 operating executives with about 30 plus year track record in growing, running, and operating businesses. And so we started more kind of independent sponsorish, and we're still in that phase as well. But now we are in the middle of raising our inaugural fund. And so, you know, that's a little bit about me. And I'll go kind of a little further. I'm married, you know, beautiful wife, 4 children, while I'm embarking on this journey of raising a fund and doing this private equity business. And so, yeah, life is pretty good. Enjoy, you know, a number of things. I coach my son's baseball team, loved reading, learning, and growing, and just picked up playing a ukulele, love learning new instruments. And so it's just a little bit about me, Sun and Moon Capital, and my background a little bit.
Appreciate your insight. And man of many talents with learning different instruments, as well as fathering 4 kids as well. So it sounds like, as well as obviously running a private equity firm. What one mistake do you see private equity firms or portfolio companies making, and what actions would you suggest to correct them?
You know, we play in a small space, but I think this happens with some of the larger firms as well. And I've actually seen it as I talk with folks that are in that middle market space, right, that have, you know, $100 million funds. I think it's just a lack of rationale for doing the deal, right? I think a lot of firms, you begin to ask them, why do they do the deal? And there's no real rationale behind it, right? And when I say rationale, I'm just talking, is it M&A, you know, roll-up strategy? Is it a product and service extension strategy? You know, and when you don't have, you know, a clear rationale behind the deal, I think that's when you start getting into the integration problems, right? Because, I mean, post-close is all about being able to integrate the ideas and the thesis that you and your team have built around this opportunity. And so I think you get, you know, there's a lack of real rationale behind why we're doing this. Now, again, these are just some of the firms that I've spoken with, right? You have some very well sophisticated firms that I've also spoken with that kind of have this model set up where it's kind of cookie cutter, essentially, where they know the rationale behind each deal that they get into. And they kind of keep that, and that helps them. And that's what we do at Sun and Moon. But anyway, I think that's one of the mistakes I see a lot, and that can hinder returns. And now you've drawn out, you know, this company you're supposed to be in for 5 years. Now you're in it for 7, 8, 9. And maybe that's just because there was no clear rationale or strategy behind the deal post-close. And so what would I suggest to do to And we've had that problem, by the way. I could share a story about our first deal that we shouldn't have done, but we did it anyway. And so we learned that you had to have some sort of rationale. And so what did we do differently, or what do I think helps? A playbook, right? Just a playbook, not just, and the playbook is a living document, right? Those are typically living documents, but some sort of playbook that says, this is how we do things. This is how we operate post-close. This is what we do. For instance, at Sun and Moon Capital, I think we have 5 playbooks. I think we have a governance playbook, right? That helps with board, right? We have the financial playbook, right? We have the operational playbook. We have the commercial playbook, right? When we're talking sales and marketing, how are we going to improve the sales and marketing of this business? And so, again, it's just a playbook that's living. It's a living document, but it gives you a clear kind of picture of, okay, where should we start? And then from there, it's about just integrating all that post-close. So that's what I would say there.
So you mentioned, if you have me to share, your first deal, lack of rationale. Just talk us through what you mean in reference to that deal with the lack of rationale. So if I'm, Alex Rawlings of Raw Capital private equity firm, then I can be like, we've done the same. We've missed out. What happened there with that first deal, if you have me to share it?
A couple of things. Number one, the due diligence process was horrible, right? We didn't have we have a tight one now, right? We have a very structured, tight due diligence process. So that was one. But there was no, I think this deal was more emotional, right? It was our first deal. We're like, okay, this is it. We're finally getting a deal done. And it became more of an emotional thing. And I learned at that point too, take the emotions out of investing, right? The writings were kind of on the wall that this wasn't the right deal at this moment of time. But again, emotions got involved. We didn't have any real rationale. We didn't have any real tight due diligence processes around this deal. All the stuff that we have now really comes from that the failure of that deal, and not, it just didn't work like we thought it was going to work. And so when I say the rationale, I mean, there was no clear strategy. There was no clear, nothing was really clear. It was really a lot of emotions going on. And, learn to take the emotions out of investing from that point. And now we have, structure and process that, it makes the deal, it helps us with the deal along the journeys from there on. So that's what I would say about that deal. And also we learned that was in the retail. It was a family owned. It was a restaurant, coffee sandwich. It was in that micro space. We also learned we don't like the restaurant business as well. So it was a lot to learn in that deal.
Well, we learned from certainly learned from our mistakes. One of the key values we have in the business here is that we make them, we learn from them, and then we share them internally so that no one else can make that. So I appreciate that that insight and that candidness. So you're as a firm, you're focused on what's called the microcap world. You mentioned that's kind of 1 million, 2 million EBITDA. What made you choose that area to invest in?
Well, a couple of things. Being part of a family, I've had, some family members in business, right? So, and they were just small. And just like my education, right? I said, wow, these companies don't know a lot, right? Which means that there could be a lot of value. But on the flip side, that means that there may be a lot more hand-holding, right? And so what attracted me to that was just having an experience just with a smaller business, a business that a family member of mine was running. They didn't have the education background I had, so I could see things that were missing, right, in that business. And so that kind of sparked it into, hey, this is a sector that, could benefit from private equity, right? There's what we call in our business, the K&E. There's a knowledge and network effect gap, right? There's a gap between knowledge and network with most of these smaller businesses. And so that's where our operating executives really come into play. And so once I kind of looked at that and I said, okay, this could be a great space to invest in. Then I started asking myself, well, why aren't the big firms investing here, right? Because if it's all about returns, right, if that's one of the main things, if you're trying to get returns, if the big firms can get 25-30% up here and they can get them down here, why aren't they coming here? And that's when I realized, well, it's not a returns thing, right? There are a couple of, and I can share this with your viewers and listeners at some point, even with you, we have a white paper around this whole thing, this whole theme. And so we said, well, the returns can be generated. It's clear that the returns can be generated, but why aren't they coming here? Well, number one, the big companies, if they have $100 million, right, sitting in a bank, right, they need to deploy $4 million in chunks. They need to deploy it in chunks, right? They can't say, they can't come to me. I can't come to them and say, hey, I need $1 million, $1.5 million. We tried that. It didn't work with the big firms, right? And so that's when we realized, okay, number one, there's too much capital sitting in their coffers. $1 million and $1.5 million doesn't help, right? They it just doesn't work for them. So that was one reason. And so we figured, okay, they can get the returns. Now we know that it's just, you know, they got too much capital. They're flux with all this cash. So then we said, okay, what could be some other factors? Well, these small business owners, it requires a little more hands-on. The due diligence, you really have to have a tight due diligence process. I mean, you have to have that for all, you know, companies, whether they're lower, micro, middle, whatever you want to call it. You have to have a tight due diligence process, but especially in this micro kind of space, right? You have to have a tight due diligence process. And so what I learned was there was a little more hands-on. And if you're not willing to be more hands-on, you know, you may lose out on this opportunity. And so one of our differentiators is that we're hands-on, right? We get in there, we get going with the owner, we get going with that company. And so we take a more, we're less transactional, more hands-on. So anyway, those are some of the things that I saw in that market. And by the way, less competitive, right? You're not competing, you know, against a ton of folks for these smaller deals, right? So yes, less competitive. You know, I think there's more room. There's more low-hanging fruit with these small businesses because the owners just kind of know what they know. And so those are some of the reasons and the rationale behind that microcap space for us.
Sorry to interrupt. Just a quick mention of our longstanding partnership with Grata. As you will probably know, the private equity scene is constantly evolving. And deal flow is moving now to proprietary and data-driven processes. Grata provides you with the data and information of over 7 million private companies. So if you're looking to improve your proprietary deal flow and improve the data access, then reach out to Grata today. Now back to the podcast.
So a few questions have come out of that. So you mentioned your due diligence process. What are you needing to be tighter and stronger? What are you doing additionally, or what do you need to consider in your due diligence process with these smaller companies? So I'm guessing there's elements of more risk factors, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great question. So, you know, I think this is back to the rationale for the deal. I think if you have a clear rationale for the deal, you know where to target your due diligence. For instance, for us, when we look at an opportunity, we're looking at a rationale of two things. It's either one or two things because of the businesses that we target. We're either going for market or service extension, right? Product service extension, or there may be some sort of M&A roll-up, right? That we can go through. With those two rationales behind the deal, now we can tailor our due diligence to kind of fit those rationales, right? And again, it's not, I get it, every industry is different, right? You got to start asking industry-specific questions, but I think our commercial due diligence, we really focus on commercial due diligence. And so, and that means for us, examining the market, right? Examining their ability to compete in that market, and then also examining management. And so we take that three-tier approach, and then we kind of say, okay, this helps our due diligence stay tight on the commercial side. We marry it with the financial due diligence piece, and that's how we begin to, you know, get some clarity and structure our due diligence. So again, it's back to playbook, right? It's back to playbook, but we also know that the playbook is a living document, and we know industries are different, and so you have to kind of tailor it to those industries. But that's how we look at the due diligence process for us.
So due diligence process to post close, you mentioned obviously potentially a strong ops team there to support the portfolio. These can be smaller businesses. You're not bringing in a exec, I'm going to guess, the chief exec that's done 5P deals, who's then going to be parachuted in. Have you had to build additional playbooks, as you've referenced a lot here, in operational support for these smaller businesses to scale?
This is great, and I'm glad. I can't wait till our website comes up. You'll be able to see this clearly. So our trademark, we have a trademark. We call it the ECE. That's the Executive Chair Ecosystem. Okay. So what we, our value add, what we do in regards to your question, and sorry if I'm digressing here, but we take our executive chairs and our executives, and they become executive chairs to the CEOs, right? They don't necessarily run the business. We typically like to keep those owners in there managing, but we bring the executive chairs in, right, as a mentor, but they have the industry knowledge, right? They have the know-how of how this business works, how to grow it. They have the knowledge and network now that I just talked about, that I talked about earlier. And so now this company that's doing $1.5 million EBITDA, $10, $20 million of revenue, they can leverage our executive, you know, our executive knowledge and network to help grow this business. And so our playbook, that's an operational playbook, right? And so our operational playbook kind of stipulates those things. And so, yes, to answer your question, we do bring in some operational expertise, but what we don't do is we don't necessarily run the companies. We typically like to have those individuals stay there and continue to run, and we just bring that knowledge and network and, you know, board and all those type of things post-close.
Makes a lot of sense. What have you found as some of the more complex elements? You mentioned due diligence. There's obviously post with regards to you protecting yourself with that that chairman type position. What have you found are some of the risk elements with microcap investing, these smaller businesses, that's maybe making it less attractive for, you know, some of those small cap, mid cap, and even large cap firms? Probably not large caps. The check sizes would be too small. They'll never do the sure deals, but they could make smaller funds. What are some of those risk elements that you hit and you overcome that maybe pushes away some of the bigger players from investing in this space?
Well, I think one of the main ones is the key man risk, right? You're typically dealing with an owner that has all the relationships, that has all the contacts, right? And so I think one of the things is just that key person risk, right? Which is why we structure our deals in a way that keeps them a little skin in the game, right? We try to keep them in the game as long as we can. And I get it. A lot of these baby boomers are just looking to retire. And so it's you know, that's one of the main elements and components of risk that we take a lot of time analyzing and trying to overcome to get comfortable with our investors around this opportunity, right? I think from there, I think other than that, you know, some of them may have some concentration, but some of them may not. I mean, you know, it all depends there. Again, that's back to the key person sometimes, right? If there is some concentration, how tied is it? How tied is that key person to that concentration? But the way you overcome that, right? How do you overcome that, right? I think one of the first things you need to make money on is your price, right? Your valuation, right? And the way you do that are a number of ways. Like, you have to factor in some sort of illiquidity discount. You have to factor in some sort of key person discount if it exists. And you have to be transparent about that with the current owner, right? When he sees a valuation that's below what he thinks it should be, you have to be okay with expressing that to management. And so I think those are a couple of ways we try to overcome those things. It doesn't always work. As we know, not everything, you know, that we plan works, but those are some of the ways we try to get around it and overcome it.
So Raw Selection is built on completing the difficult searches, the searches that the big SREC firms have struggled with, and we've built our track record on our basis on working with lower and middle market private equity firms across Europe and North America on the searches for the firm and for the portfolio companies that other firms have been incapable of completing. So if you're exploring a new opportunity, either within a private equity firm or a portfolio C-suite executive in a peer-backed setting, please do reach out to us at Raw Selection. We'd love to support you in securing your next role within the private equity industry. Alongside the podcast, we're passionate about giving back to the industry and giving people information that they can run and utilize.
One thing we do regularly every year is we run SALI reports on accurate and live data of people that we've interviewed and people that have shared their information with us. So if you're looking to compare your current compensation or your compensation for your next hire in your private equity firm or portfolio company, then please check out our YouTube channel and see the playlist of salary surveys.
When you mentioned, interestingly, the key man element, which in these size businesses, there will be one individual, will be multiple individuals, there will be one main person, usually the owner, that everything centers around if they're still active within the business. How do you protect the organization? In fact, not how do you protect, how do you begin to differentiate that and begin to push responsibility out to other people, diversify that reliance on the owner, and what's some of the steps that you have to take in order to protect yourself against, you know, losing the key man?
Got it. So this, I know this is it keeps sounding redundant, but I think we're getting to why a playbook is so important. Right. That's what we're getting to. Right. So our governance playbook helps us with that. Now, again, not everything works out the same. But even in our due diligence process, when I talked about what are the three things that we are really keying on, we're keying on, you know, the market, we're keying on the ability to compete, and then we're keying on the management and the team. Right. And so we're trying to get a sense early on how this thing may look. And then we bring in our playbook, our governance playbook, to help us kind of solidify how we should do things moving forward. Now, as far as protection goes, I mean, I'm not going to say anything that people don't know, but I mean, you know, employment agreements, right? I mean, those are some of the things you try to do to protect you. But I think one of the main things is skin in the game, right? For us, we don't buy out 100%. We just won't do it, right? And so having that owner with some skin in the game, taking some chips off the table, but leaving some on, that tends to help a little. I mean, they're getting a big payday, so they can just jump ship and go, right, if they want. But we typically try to do that. And by the way, a lot of these smaller companies, right, they've got employees that have been there 30-plus years. These employees are dear to them, right? They really have they're really, even though they're exiting, right, they have this sense of I can't let these folks down, and they don't want to work with a group that's going to come in and just kind of gut the whole thing, right? And so I think there's an emotional, psychological piece to it. I think there are management, you know, employment agreements that can help you there. Well, and I also think the skin in the game kind of helps a little bit, just keeping some chips on the table. But it all goes back to the playbooks. I think playbooks are really so important. So,
yeah, I agree. We create as many as we can in the business here. And that's just even thinking of how do we improve things, how do we develop things, but also obviously transition as people get promoted and et cetera. You can drop people straight in. Completely agree. What are your influences? I can see behind you there's a fair few books. What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to that you recommend that others check out?
So I'm a big autobiography person. I love autobiographies on any folks. And this is not all of them, but okay, so this is a book that, you know, most will be like, how does that relate? So I think Moneyball is a phenomenal book. I think if you get out of the baseball, I love baseball, by the way, but if you remove the baseball aspect of it, there's a lot of supply and demand there. There's a lot of statistical, like all these leading indicators are there, right? That it's a great book. You get a sense of business out of this thing that you can take. And if you, when you see our new website, you'll see the theme is around baseball. I love baseball. So I will say that's a great one. Autobiographies. I mean, you know, me being an African-American, Reginald Lewis is always someone, he was the impetus to kind of me getting started. So I always direct people to guys like Reggie Lewis and how he did that with Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun. I think his story is phenomenal. I love reading history. You know, there's a great book. I always tell people I like reading outside of my expertise. I think you learn more when you read outside of it. So I really don't read a ton of books within my expertise, right? I just kind of read outside of it, and I learn a lot. Like reading Moneyball taught me a lot about business. So I would say that there's a great book called Guns, Germs, and Steel that is phenomenal. If you just historic, if you like history, I mean, this is a great book, Guns, Germs, and Steel. So I would say those are some of the books that I recommend. I've got plenty more, but I won't hold up this podcast for that. Influences, guys like Reggie Lewis, Schwartzman, he's an influence. Although he's, you know, he's high level, he's an influence. His book was great, by the way. I don't remember what it's called. It's off the top of my head. I can't remember. But anyway, Schwartzman is a great influence. I don't
Stephen
have any more.
As in Whatever It Takes.
Yes, Stephen Schwartzman, Whatever It Takes. Great book, right? You get to get a sense of, you know, it's really about communication, man. It's about communication. It's about network. It's about things like that, right? He has a great background. So he's great. Other than that, I really can't think of any other influences. There are guys that are local, like Mayor Mike Rollins here in Dallas. He's a great influence to me. There are some other folks that I probably can't, just off the top of my head, don't come. And as far as listening, I really don't listen to much. I listen to, music-wise, I love all music. Music-wise, I love all music. But I spend a lot of time listening to, I work on myself a lot, so I spend a lot of time in personal development. So I love guys like Joe Dispenza. I love Deepak Chopra. Stoicism. I love Stoicism. Holiday. It's right here. Ryan Holiday. Ryan Holiday, right? This one, The Daily Stoic, right? Ryan Holiday is great. Robert Greene, The Art of War. He does the war and the play. He's phenomenal. So anyway, that's some of the stuff that I'm into, man. I can go on, but I won't take up that much time with it.
I appreciate that. Some really good books in there, and some I've read, and some I've got to read. I've just got Whatever It Takes. I look to my right somewhere on my shelf. To get through. So,
and hold on, real quick. This one right here, I want to pull this one down. This one right here, Leading Indicators. Mm-hmm. This is a great one. It's phenomenal. Zachary Carabel, if I'm saying his name right, he does a phenomenal job. He's an economist. He does a phenomenal job just talking about how the leading indicators that we see today, you know, evolve from something that happened in the past. And then he asks the question, are those leading indicators still beneficial today? And so he just makes you think about those things differently. So I would say that that's a phenomenal one to read if you're into economics and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
Well, that's all right. We talk a lot on the podcast about leading, lagging indicators. So I've not seen a book on that. So I appreciate the recommendation. If anybody wishes to reach out to you post this podcast, how best do they get in touch, please?
Yeah, so email is always great. I'm more than happy to share my email. It's javery@sunandmooncapital.com. When our website is up, there's a contact us page. Hopefully that's up but typically in LinkedIn, you can just type in my name, Javar Avery. You can go on LinkedIn. And I'm more than happy to connect with anyone that, number one, wants to learn, right? Kind of what are we doing and maybe have some interest in it. And then number two, of course, you know, allocators, right? Can always use more allocators to talk with, and then companies, right? And so that's how you can find me, and that's my email, and feel free to reach out.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Javar. It's interesting to learn more about the microcap sector. Your interest in it, clearly incredibly passionate by the way you've come across. So thank you very much for sharing everything you have.
No, I thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure, and good luck. And I wish you guys the best plus 10% on your journey. And I'll make sure there are other folks that I think you you know, might enjoy talking with. I will ping them and say you need to reach out and do this show. And I think they're doing a great thing.
Appreciate that. Well, thank you very much. And as always, thank you very much for all our listeners for joining us today. So do you ever need support with private equity professionals or portfolio executives across Europe or North America, please do reach out to us at Raw Selection. And if you haven't done so already, please do subscribe to the podcast and you'll be notified of our next podcast, which now comes out every single week. But till the next time, keep smashing it, and thank you very much for listening.